no such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do.
No, we don't.
A donkey is eating, a donkey needs a pallet. There's nothing else to eat.
He was massive. Legs, ass, spit. But I bust out laughing watching.
So all the negativity's gone around hurling, lads. Like, I mean, Salt Hill yesterday was an absolute classic. It's hard to even put all of the pieces of brilliance and skill and brilliant goals and go through all of them. We'd only cover one game, Paul Murphy. Like, I mean, it started off with Shane Bennett's catch for Jack Prendergast's goal. And I don't know, was that a set move? Because he didn't even, for some way, he had a sixth sense to know Jack Prendergast was there without even looking around at him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, there was a huge amount in this game. There was a huge amount over the weekend in general. But yeah, look, the game in Salt Hill was just, it was absolutely brilliant. And I suppose there has been a lot of criticism and ups and downs over the last while with the league. But look, we're kind of jumping week to week as far as I can see. People are really being critical, picking out a few small points. And there are major points in it, certainly maybe freezing different things. But I mean, I think we've seen across the games, and like I said, Salt Hill being the big one, that, you know, everything that we still love is still there, you know, and how bad we're coming away from a game saying that the scoreline was enormous and we had, you know, so many goals and different bits of skill. And look, you can't put it down to anything else, only that the skill was immense. Desi Hutchinson's goal, I mean, just powered out, caught the ball, turned and stuck it in the top corner, you know. So, yeah, absolutely brilliant. And look, I think if you wanted a game, I think we had close to 90 scoring chances. So it was just a brilliant game and really the highlight of the weekend.
Michael Carton, are we going to go down the road where people are going to give out that there's too many scores?
Yeah, I think so. People will give out about everything, Willie, but no, look, this was a great weekend for hurling. Hurling snobbery's back, thank God. It's great to see all the scores, and more so, I think the refs have to be applauded because we give out about them enough, but they let the games flow this weekend, and I think that's why we've seen so much scores, and free-flowing hurling was back, and it was just enjoyable to watch. You were sitting down, and I was enjoying watching every game, and I disagree, it was the hurling game of the week. I thought the Antrim Wexford game was better, but it was great to see all the scores and not so many frees, so hopefully it continues.
So you mentioned the Desi Hutchinson goal, Paul. Shane Bennett's goal was sensational as well. It was a drop hit because he was going to get hooked. And that was a combination of the three Bennett brothers, Stephen with a lovely little ball over the top to Kieran, and then he set up Shane for the goal. Like, I mean, sensational stuff, really. There was the Joe Canning assists. There was the Joe Canning sidelines, passes to Cottle Mannion. He did it twice in the first maybe 10, 15 minutes. Brian Kincannon, sensational skill. You mentioned, like, again, Peter Casey the night before kind of doing a Peter Duggan on it, holding the ball like an egg and spoon bloody carry on. Like, I mean, it was. And then obviously, look, you could go through all the games. It was just, I don't know, like, I mean, some of the managers were talking about these really high scores and they're putting it down to the skill levels. And I think they're right, aren't they? Like, and obviously skill levels plus players mind the ball now. So, like, I mean, there's no clearances that are going to somebody else. And then, you know, a passage of play for 3 or 4 minutes where there's no score. Like, do we have to just get used to this is hurling now?
Yeah, like, I mean, it is where it's gone. It's the skill level is absolutely enormous. And like you said, players are really thinking. Every ball is a considered ball. Their players are getting their head up. But not only that, they know what the players around them are doing. You know, Mick said there, and, you know, he is right. The game of the weekend was Antrim and Wexford. In terms of skill on show, probably it was the Waterford-Galway match. But if you look at, like, the likes of, I mean, you've mentioned so many points there. Neil McManus then as well, you know, when he got the ball in his hand, didn't even look up. He ran kind of right. He was on the 21, ran diagonally, knowing he was going to flick it back across for the goal for Antrim.
Yeah.
And that just shows, like, the thinking and the cleverness of players at the moment. It's not just the simple case of, yeah, it is the physical skill, but the players are thinking so quickly at the moment. Like you said, then again, with Shane Bennett. You know, Shane Bennett caught a ball, knew he was going to be hooked or blocked, so dropped it to the ground and a drop shot into the side net. I mean, it was absolutely brilliant, you know. So players are just thinking so fast, reacting so fast, and the skill as well. Very few balls are going astray. So all these things combined, I mean, you know, who'd want to be a defender in many ways when there's forwards moving the way they are? But I think there's just so many examples over the weekend of why there's reasons to be positive. Tony Kelly with 20 points, and, you know, who'd begrudge him? He's basically dancing around the pitch and there's no one coming near to him. That's just pure skill. It's the athlete he is. So I think, you know, there's so many things over the weekend and going forward into a championship that, you know, where do we look that you're not going to miss something over the course of the championship, you know?
Well, that's the thing. You're not going to go in, have a cup of tea, Mick, anyways, or you could be missing 1-3. Like, I mean, there was 90 scoring opportunities in Salt Hill. We mentioned that. Limerick scored 33 points and 20 wides. 35 shots at the goal, or that's 53 shots at the goal in 75 minutes. Like, I mean, that must be some kind of record. That's just one team. Like, I mean, now we'll get into the reasons for that in a minute, but Clare scored 34 against Dublin. Limerick scored 33 against Cork. Galway scored 428 against Waterford. Waterford scored 323 away to Galway and lost the game. Like, I mean, it's outrageous scoring. Now, the kind of challenge match feel a little bit in this league might be feeding into it a little bit. Lack of crowds might be feeding into it a little bit.
Yeah, definitely, Woody. I think because we've seen the lowest scoring game being the Antrim game with a crowd, and that had the most championship feel to it, like the most physicality in it. The other games, like, they're great to watch, but it's all out attack. It's who's going to score the most? It's not defending sort of has gone out the window a little bit. Their defenders are hurling well, they're playing well, but there seems to be so much freedom around the pitch for these lads to get the scores. Like, they're scoring not under a huge amount of pressure. So,
well, that's it.
Will change for championship, definitely, but it does have a little bit of challenge game feel to it at the moment.
It's that word that pundits in hurling love using, Paul. It's intensity, and that probably isn't there. And intensity obviously leads into, you know, winning the ball back potentially, or marking your man that bit tighter, and you've probably more motivation when a crowd is there and all your family are watching you and everything.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And the crowd, you know, I think the crowd is going to have a serious effect on the games when they come back in. Again, it was something we would have commented on last year, even playing the matches, like, let's say the warm-up matches or even coming into the championship, that, you know, players who were on the field were saying, you know, it's so easy to communicate. You know, if I was in a back line when I was playing, one of the hardest things is a player's after clearing a ball, he's now looking up the pitch, admiring the ball, he's after striking, but his man has gone running 20 yards away from across the pitch. And you can't communicate with that player now because, you know, there's a crowd and the crowd are shouting and there's a bit of confusion. And, you know, that isn't there at the moment because there's no crowd. You can communicate with the corner forward nearly at this stage if you want. So the likes of that, the likes also as well, if you're going to rise a ball and the crowd reacting, or you drop a ball or you don't rise a ball, the crowd reacting plays with, you know, the mentality of players. Players get a little bit flustered, a small bit. So, you know, I think crowds will have an effect. And you also see that it also plays into the atmosphere on the pitch. The most rowdy game I think we saw so far in the league was Antrim and Wexford. And there was a crowd there, and you could see when Neil McManus and Matty O'Hanlon were going at it, you know, you could hear the crowd, and it was G-ing it on and it was pushing it. And so I think when the crowd comes back, it'll quite obviously change, you know, the narrative of games, and it will have a small bit more of effect, you know, even adding to the nerves of players when they're taking shots. So, you know, I think when you do see the crowds coming in over the next while, it will add, of course, to the atmosphere, but also to how players are actually playing the game.
Yeah, I was going to talk about Limerick here now, but you've just mentioned Matthew O'Hanlon. Michael, that sending off was outrageous. He, like, that man did nothing. Neil McManus was the aggressor. For me, it looked like he was just trying to push him down on the ground by his head because, you know, he was charging at him and he got sent off.
Yeah, I'd be sick if it was Matthew O'Hanlon. Neil McManus instigated the whole thing. He charged at him and, like, I'm not right. Matthew O'Hanlon did catch the helmet and he did pull it, so by the rules of the law, he should be sent off. But all he was doing was dragging him down as he was being charged. And Neil McManus actually was a very lucky boy. He struck a few of the lads with the hurl afterwards. Not only did he instigate it, he hit a few lads with the hurl after. He was very lucky. And then he had a huge part to play in getting the draw. He caught a great ball, he got a great point, and he set up the goal all after he should have been sent off. So, like, Matthew O'Hanlon should feel very hard done by.
Yeah, what do you think of that, Paul? Do you think he was just trying to push his head down? You can't push his head down without touching his helmet.
Yeah, this is it. Look, unfortunately for Matthew O'Hanlon, the rule is the rule of that. You know, you put your hand towards the helmet and you pull at it. And look, Neil McManus highlighted as well. He came up and he was pointing at the helmet straight away. The linesman was in front. He was kind of leaving the linesman and the referee with no doubt, or leaving him with no choice but to send off Matthew O'Hanlon. But like Mick said, you'd be feeling fairly aggrieved because, sure, he was charged. Like, Neil McManus was going at him. And like Mick said, I think Neil McManus was lucky to stay on the pitch. I can't remember which Wexford player went to rise the ball a few minutes later, and Neil McManus actually came in and shouldered him into the head as he was rising. It was a dangerous enough tackle. And I think, I don't know, did it influence the next decision of when he was actually sent off? Because when he was sent off, it was actually quite harmless. You know, he left the hurdle too long. But I think if you look back, the tackle he actually did in the Wexford lad, again, the blood was up. I don't think Neil McManus went in with any great intent, but he was on a yellow at this stage. And, you know, if I went in and did that on a player, I'd be expecting at least a yellow anyway. So I think he was lucky to probably stay on the pitch as long as he did. But he certainly, you know, when he went to Matty O'Hanlon, he knew what he was at when the helmet was pulled. I think he was seeing dollar signs in the eyes. He said, brilliant. And he highlighted to the linesman, highlighted to referee. And unfortunately, look, the referee had no choice. Hand on the helmet, you have to send him off.
Yeah, exactly. The cheek of McManus, after being the instigator of the whole thing, to start waving around with his helmet. Like, I mean, Matthew O'Hanlon just tried to defend himself. And of course, then Davey and Gleeson go at it on the line. Like, I mean, this Davey, like, he's a loose cannon. I don't mind. Like, it's a great bit of drama anyways, and we need characters like Davey in the game as far as I'm concerned. He said after the game, I have a huge desire in me to win, and I don't care. I want to win. I don't think that will change. And if you take that fight out of the dog, you're in trouble. And then he explains what the fight was about, which it's fairly obvious anyways. He said it was a line ball. He thought it was out. I didn't think it was out. I could be wrong, and I would be the first one to say I'm wrong. Can you believe this, Mick? They're arguing over a feckin' line ball.
I can with Davey, you know. Look, he uses it as a tool to motivate his players, but he has to learn himself, because, like, how can you give out to one of your players for being a discipline? And Wexford actually lost their discipline in the last second half of the game. They gave away an awful lot of city frees, and he has to lead by example. Look, I don't mind. I like when managers go at it. It's funny to watch.
Yeah.
I laughed at Gleeson. His demeanour was very funny. You know, just the arms crossed, and he played acute. He got pushed, and Davey got the line. But I just think Davey, for his own players, I love the motivation. I like his shouting. I love his passion. I just think he has to learn a bit. He can't be getting the gaze, because he can't really give out to his players then for them losing their discipline, you know. And they did in that second half. They gave away a few needless frees and gave Antrim a few scores that they shouldn't have got throughout the game. So, and I think he has to look at his own free taker, because we've seen it down the line again and again, where the few missed frees, they're going to cost them badly in Championship. And that second half, they should have been 6-7 clear at the end, and they weren't, and that was down to the frees.
Yeah. I mean, just to go back to Davey, like, he clearly can't control his temper, Paul. But I disagree with Michael there, saying that, you know, it's to motivate his players. I don't think it is. I think he just kind of loses the plot a little bit. Like, I mean, I do accept against Tipperary the time with Jason Ford, I would maybe accept his excuse. I think he admitted that he was trying to rile up his players that day. But they were winning by 5 points when he starts losing his cool at this stage. Like, I mean, do you think that's planned, or do you think, like, you can see him, he's clearly just losing his temper.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with Mick. I think it's planned, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah, look, I mean, if you see the interview with Davey after the game, he said, look, if a few different decisions went their way, they could have been 8 or 10 points up in the first half, and the game was completely different. I think that shows you what Davey thinks of these small decisions. Like, that's how he sees them. And, like, if you look at the first part where he got riled up and the referee came into him, it was a line ball. Now, in fairness to him, I'd argue the same for my team. It was a kind of a 50-50.
Yeah.
Wexford lad knocked it out, or Antrim lad knocked it out with Wexford lad hand. Antrim got the line ball, and he was arguing for it, and he was fighting. And the referee thought about it, talked to the linesman. They could have got that decision, you know. And Davey looks at those things as, you know, maybe if we got those few things, we could get a break and we could win the match. If you go back, I think it was Saul Till in 2019, they were playing Galway, and he got sent off in that game as well. If you look at the times he ends up getting sent off, okay, there's high-pressured situations. But what seems to be doing is, you know, he'll come down, like, he's a very, I suppose, emotive leader. Like, he'll go out and he'll be shouting at the players, trying to rile them up. But he's also distracting from what's happening on the pitch. Antrim are coming back at Wexford at this stage. He came down to the pitch, kind of riled the lads up, was trying to maybe take the sting out of the Antrim attack, got sent off. But sure, I mean, he was still influencing the game. Like, I mean, he got sent off, but sure, he was still in the stand. He came onto the pitch at halftime. He was the bottle break. He was down talking to the players. So, like, was he sent off? I mean, he was still able to talk to the players. So I think he knows what he's doing. Again, I don't hold it against him. That's just the way he sees a way he can influence the game. And it's worked for him before. So I think, to be honest, he might hold on to it going forward in the future.
Yeah, he pushed Darren Gleeson. You see, I don't know how he's supposed to influence his players in a positive way by getting sent off, because he's not on the line anymore. I do accept up in Antrim, because of the way the ground is. But in Croke Park, you wouldn't be able to come back down for a water break. I think he got thrown back off the field in the second water break when he came down. But I don't know, what benefits does he get out of it? Because in my experience, we were always told, leave the referee alone or he'll play against you. Do you know what I mean? Davey obviously believes in the philosophy is give the referee enough shit and you'll get something in his head and he'll give you a big decision later on, Mick.
Yeah, well, I'd say he's saying to his players, well, he leave the ref to me, oil the wall, drawing and shouting and use play. So, like, it's always him at the ref and the linesman, you know. Like, you don't often see the Wexford players at it, but he's always at it. So I'd say he probably does give that information to his team, saying, look, oil the wall, drawing and shouting. But I just don't think it works that well. Like, I know he's trying to G them up, but I honestly don't think it works, and he should concentrate more on setting Wexford up with a small margin. Like, Paul's right, when he got sent off, there was only a wall there stopping him. There was no difference between being on the line and being zero difference. So it didn't really help his team too much at all. But in the future, he just has to be more careful because he can't put hands on anybody. And again, I think it's a message he puts across, oil the wall, the roar and shout. But I don't I can't see. Wexford are pumped up for this game, really. Like, you've seen the very first score they got and the very first foul they got. They were fist pumping and cheering. And I think Davey might have set the tone for the game, saying, we want this. And it's a tough place to go and it's going to be a bit intimidating. And Wexford were G'd up from the start, you know, so it makes Antrim's performance all the better.
Yeah, Galatasaray, according to Brendan Cummins, Paul. That's what it's like going up to Corrigan Park. Come here, we'll move on from that one because Limerick are officially back in business, and I have to start off with Keane Lynch's interview with Ayr, lads. He got man of the match. He gave a great interview. He's a likable sort of a fella, and he said that he still had a lot of wintering to get off him. Now, if Keane Lynch's definition of wintering well is obviously a lot different than mine, Paul, because, like, I mean, this lad is an absolute beast of a man. All the Limerick lads are, the chests on them. The new young lad wing back Coughlin, another man, big chest. They all look like rugby players, these lads. So I don't know what wintering well does. I don't think Keane Lynch drinks or smokes or anything. I wonder what he does. He eats too much ice cream or something, Paul.
I think his version of wintering is when he drops down to a six pack instead of just having a full eight pack. I think that's Keane Lynch's version, whereas the rest of us have the full keg when we're in the winter. But look, I mean, he knows himself well. Maybe how he's feeling on the pitch and how he's moving, he might be saying one thing or another. But look, he's in incredible shape. And like you said, every single one of those Limerick lads, you see Coughlin there as well coming on. For all the world, it was Dermot Burns or Kyle Hayes going up the sideline. And couldn't get over that these guys were in leaving cert, you know. And they're specimens of men on the pitch. But look, Keane Lynch, if he's not in a bad place for if he thinks he's still winter or he's still getting winter off him at the moment. But look, they're all in great condition. Maybe he's been a bit modest. Maybe he's been a bit humble. I'm not sure. But they're all in incredible condition. And they're all putting pressure on each other at the moment, which is a significant thing. Anyone they seem to bring on, and they're changing around their forward line, they're changing around their positions, and each player that comes in is performing. So it's a brilliant place for John Kiely to be. You know, I see Peter Casey on there, Pat Ryan the weekend. There's lads just hurling well all over the pitch. Anyone who's coming on is getting their chance. So brilliant for John Kiely, and brilliant for the team as a whole, because they're putting pressure on each other, and there's no shortage of options. Young players, old players, they're just all playing well and they're all in great shape. So they're in an incredible place at the moment.
Yeah, I don't fancy John Kiely's job picking that back line with all the options he has in it. We can't talk about this match, Mick, without talking about Cork's shambolic puck-out strategy in the first half. Now, this just wasn't good enough as far as I'm concerned. How many points and goal? Like, Pat Ryan could have had a goal off a turnover. Boylan could have had a kick goal off a straight turnover. How many points did he get off the turnover? And it was very clear from the very first one, Mick, that Limerick were up for this. Limerick were targeting this short puck-out. And when two of them went astray, I wouldn't care if my manager didn't tell me to. I ain't doing it again.
Yeah. Like, they obviously spoke in depth in the Cork camp to Patrick Collins about, look, stick to this rule. But we spoke about this 2 weeks ago, Willie, that Cork were moving well, but it's going to feed into Limerick's game plan completely and how physical Limerick's forward line are tackling. Like, I couldn't believe what they were doing again and again and the amount of turnovers they had. Now, look, they had players there that won't be there in Championship, but... like, if you're looking at that video and you're Patrick Collins, you have to say to yourself, where are we going to go? Because if you don't go short the way they have been playing, they haven't got the half-forward line to hit the long ball, and you're hitting the ball to the best half-back line in the country at the moment. So they've serious, serious homework to do. For me, they have to pull Limerick's half-back line all over the place and not have a 50-50 aerial ball and have a ball that the likes of Robbie O'Flynn is sprinting across and coming short for it. Because they can't play out of that defence in 4 weeks' time, they'll get destroyed again. So they really have to have, I think, a really mobile half-forward line running across the pitch, pulling Limerick's half-back line all over the place. I think that's the only answer, because they won't win it aerially and they won't go short. So it's loads of homework for Patrick Collins. But say he's dreading 4 weeks' time, because where do you go on that team to get easy bookouts? It's a nightmare.
Yeah, well, like, I mean, the very obvious here, Paul, is that either they bring back a sweeper and have a spare man back there, because Limerick probably won't follow him up. You know, like you were explaining here, it'd be seven on seven against five on five. At least you've a spare man then to work with, or else you start picking half forwards that can win, you know, some sort of high ball. Like, I mean, they're actually doing neither at the moment.
Yeah, and they're taking their time as well. Like, if you're doing a quick puck out there or a sharp puck out, you're nearly better off if you can do it quick enough and not give the other team time to reset. Like, Limerick were turning around, resetting, doing what they wanted, and then Cork were going, taking the puck out and taking it short. Like, you have to give yourself as many options as possible. If I was the Cork team, and maybe they have to plan for it in the next few weeks, you know, you'd be saying to your half-hour line, first of all, put the pressure on the half-hour line. Say, look, lads, if you want to be playing there, you're going to have to win a few puckouts, or you're going to have to be fighting, and at least don't let the Limerick lads win them. Pull in together in around centre forward and make the break out. We've seen many teams, particularly Limerick, doing it over the last few years. But you're just going to ask questions. Like, don't not ask questions of the Limerick team. Don't set up and, you know, Limerick look like the ones in control the weekend, not Cork. It's your puck out. You should be in control, not them. Yeah. So I think, you know, Cork should be going away from going, right, if we're going to do the short puck out, you know, we need to be able to go long as well, because if we go short every single time, well, Limerick will just set up in a position to squeeze us, and they will squeeze us, turn over the ball. I think they had 10 shots in 8 minutes, which is your first indication, like, from the ball being thrown in, if after 8 minutes, in any scenario, they've had 10 shots, you're going, well, we have to change something here. So I think if Cork really want this short game to work, they have to go long, and they have to make going long an actual realistic option that Limerick don't think, oh, sure, they're just going to puck it long to try and distract from the short puck outs. They have to have, you know, more than just the short puck out, we're going to go with this. They need to have more to it than just simply forcing the issue with the short puck out.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. It's too predictable. And anyways, Michael, when you have a tactic that's very, very obvious, the other teams have plenty of time to target it, and they did target it. And now Cork are almost back to the drawing board. Limerick kind of drop into zones, Michael, because whenever somebody gets, especially at the cornerback, they might let him have it and then kind of descend on him. But Limerick kind of put their players into zones that whenever, if somebody's to get it even in the half back line, say in the cornerback gets it and then he goes to the half back line, Limerick almost have three men around that fella immediately. You know, yeah. Whatever way they're not standing beside their men, they're standing in areas of the field that enough of them can get across to a fella, you know, and they seemed really up for it. Like, even Keane Lynch setting the tone really early, stuck a Cork man out over the sideline. And I don't know, that short puck, and they're so big and strong then, Michael, as well. You can't actually go past the man to create that overlap.
I know, and like, if you look at like Cork's old game with the O'Connors, they weren't big men, but their movement in the half-hour line created chances to give them the puck out. And like, Cork have that pace, like Dara Fitzgibbon, Kingston, Robbie O'Flynn, they have really, really fast players who can move across that line, and the Limerick half-back line won't like it. Like, you don't see Dermot Burns on the opposite side of the pitch. You always see him on his side of the pitch.
Yeah.
Have to drag him across. And that option for the short ball where the forward comes out and gets in front of him rather than high, that's for me, is the only game plan Cork can go with if they want to beat Limerick. So they have the players, they have the pace, but they're not using it at the moment.
Yeah.
It was working early in the league. But it won't work from championship, because as you say, Willie, everyone knows what they're going to do, and if you press them and put pressure, it will collapse. So I definitely think that's the way forward. Use their pace. They probably have more pace than any other team in the country, you know, on the forward line.
The problem with Limerick, Paul, and I've seen them live plenty of times, is that they don't follow the half forward line when they go off running. They all stand, the three lads will stand in their positions, and the half forward line might come into different areas, but Limerick have all dropped back half a line. So if the half forward line move up towards midfield, Willie O'Donoghue, Dara Donovan, and the Limerick half forward line are all in around that area. Do you know what I mean? I think they're the most difficult team to devise a poke out strategy around.
Yeah, and that's it. And look, that's where the bar is now. They're after setting the bar. A big thing for me with Limerick, and anything they seem to do, they just know exactly what they're about, and they know what they're doing. There's no confusion at all, whether it's open play, whether it's puck outs. They just know what they're about, and which is a huge thing for any team to be able to say, like, regardless of the scenario, Cork going short, Cork going long, whatever, they knew what way they were setting up. And like you said, Dermot Burns doesn't have to move. Like, I mean, any defender who doesn't have to move is absolutely delighted. You're happy to stay in your position. But they know that, look, if my man runs across the pitch, I'm staying here. Simple as that. And if someone comes into my area, I look after them, grand. And like you said, they have the lads in front of them protecting them then. And they're just a kind of a case. And they seem to have the attitude as well of, we'll just win the ball. Just win the ball the whole time. Everything is so simple in many ways with them. We're going to work hard. We know what our jobs are. We're going to win the ball. And once we win it, if you just look around the pitch, like the nearest people to them, there's lads moving towards them. There's lads moving away. There's lads running off the shoulder. The fella who has his back to the goal knows I don't have to break the tackle here because I have runners off either shoulder. Pop it to the man who's actually facing the goal and off we go. So they just know what they're about all over the pitch. And that's where the bar is now. The bar is set at that. So it's down to teams now to go, okay, ask questions. What will be a scenario here that will ask questions of this Limerick team? And if you can do that, it's not easy, but if you can do that, that's your job now to try and beat this Limerick team.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. Like, there was an element of shadow boxing, Mick, with Cork. Let's be honest, they picked a very young team. Only Damien Cahillane was over 24 years of age. So Cork will have learned a lot, whereas Limerick didn't beat Cork's, you know, best team. And now Cork have learned those short puckouts. I think, in a weird way, will Cork have gotten more out of the game than Limerick?
No, I don't think Limerick are bothered with learning curves like this. I think they just go out, and that's the exact game plan they'll have 4 weeks time, Willie, and
yeah,
if they implement like that, it's going to be the same scoreline. Like, the worrying part is, like, say their best playmaker is Mark Holman. He was so occupied with Kane Lynch, he couldn't set anything up from defence. He couldn't get on ball. He couldn't do what he normally does because he couldn't let him go. Like, Kane Lynch had 3 points in the first 10 minutes, and he had to push up on him. He couldn't sit back and play his normal game where he's going to sweep across, and that's still going to be a problem in 4 weeks time because he. For me, you'll have to release Mark Holman. You can't have him marking Kane Lynch like that. So it's actually going to create more headaches for Kingston because, for me, you want to play him on the wing and not have him so occupied and running around. But if he plays on the wing, he's going to be on, say, Garrod Hegarty. Like, you know, and you can't leave him again. So the Cork want their playmakers setting up scores from their half-back line, and they're so occupied with their players. It's actually created more headaches for Cork for me because Limerick know exactly what they're going to play, as Paul said. They have a lot set up for a lot short and long, whereas Cork don't know now. They're going to have way more questions in 4 weeks' time and how they're getting players on the ball.
I've said it before here on the show, Paul. Cork's system is perfectly set up to use a sweeper to go with seven backs.
Yeah. Yeah, it is, 100%. And, you know, we were sitting here a few weeks ago talking about Mark Holman saying, I think it was in the Water match, saying, look, it's incredible how well he played. And Mick said it there, you know, he didn't have the influence at all at the weekend. You know, I think here in Kingston we'll be looking at that, saying we can't not have Coleman in the game. He has to have influence. And like you said, they are set up. They could use that sweeper in the backs. But, you know, in a funny way, I'd kind of be saying it. I'd agree with you, Woolley, there in that, you know, Cork aren't actually in a bad position, I don't think myself, going forward in 4 weeks, because they're after getting a small bit of a kick up the arse, to be honest, here now this weekend. You know, they have their work cut out for them. They didn't put out their full team, but a few of the younger lads stood up, like, you know, was it Jack O'Connor got 2-1? A few of the lads stood up there, like, you know, so they're kind of looking in 4 weeks' time going, we have a huge amount of work to do. Whereas if they went out the weekend, and it would have been great, I suppose, for Kieran Kingston if they did put in a big performance, but you know, they're kind of, I suppose, they could be a little bit sore now after the weekend, and there could be a little bit of bite in them. So, look, we've seen Cork cause Limerick serious problems and beaten them in championship over the last few years. So I would kind of have I think they're kind of dark horses still. You know, they can't, we were talking about them a few weeks ago, that they were a great team and they're moving well. I still think that in 4 weeks' time, we will see a different performance, and they know the questions. You'd like to think they know the questions they're going to have to ask at Limerick now. So I'd be kind of holding a small bit of hope here for Cork that in 4 weeks' time they could come with something that Limerick might be expecting. And if there's any, I suppose, hesitancy in that Limerick group that they think they're going to go out and do the same thing to Cork that happened this weekend, that could be the rock they perish on. Now, we could be talking here in 4 weeks and they could have bet them by 15 points, we don't know. But I still think Cork aren't in a bad position going ahead for 4 weeks' time. You know, they rested their big players. They might have a bit of a sting in the tail now come 4 weeks' time. So I suppose we'll wait and see.
Yeah, exactly. We'll wait and see. Kieran Kingston made that speech. I'm not going to ask you about this, Paul. You've probably never heard one of these speeches in your life. Mick, me and you have. Kieran Kingston says, basically, we said at half time, let's go out and try and win the second half. You know you're in big trouble when your manager's saying that to you, Michael.
Oh, that horrible thing to be done. How demoralising, you know, and I have been told that on many occasions. But yeah, it's awful. Look, it's about showing character. Like, you know, at that stage it is. Like, you can't go out and lay in your backs and let them do whatever they want, but how much do you learn as well? Like, Limerick took their foot off the gas a little bit and were playing around with the ball. But as Paul said, like the highlights for Cork for me were they could open Limerick up. They should have had four goals. They missed two easy enough opportunities in front of the goal. So the goal chances are there, and they will be there in 4 weeks' time. And that was with Cork playing fairly poorly. So like with their pace and going through the middle, they can hurt. They can hurt Limerick. Just they have to have more confidence and a bit more composure on the ball, because they should have had two more goals in front of the goal. And that'd be a worry for John Coyley watching that game, that they got opened up a few times. So it's one big positive take for Kingston, but I definitely hate that speech at half time.
Oh, it's absolutely desperate, and it's very hard mentally to go out and nearly say, right, this is a new game, even though you're down by 15 points, and go out and try and win the second half. Clare had a good win over Dublin. This was another good game. Did it boil down to a tactical change at half time? I think Brian Lowen was saying Darragh Gray was a big outlet for them in the first half. They must have got six or seven puckouts to Darragh Gray on his own. At his ease, he got them. We couldn't really allow him to be dominated the game the way he was, so we pushed up on him in the second half. This is almost a little bit kind of get into your mind about Cork. You know, if you play an extra sweeper, you'll have an extra man for a puck out and make your life a little bit easier, and then Limerick would have to decide to push up maybe. I don't want to go back to talking about Limerick again, Paul, but Clare obviously had the brains to you know, tweak it at half time.
Yeah, look, they just recognise the problem there, and like Darragh Gray will go and hurl if you let him hurl, you know, and he did get, I don't know what he got the weekend, but he was popping up getting scores there. So, you know, it was just that thing, I suppose, of that sometimes you can have a plan in a match, doesn't really work out, and another player steps up and it's causing a problem. But, you know, fair play to Lowen and Clare. They recognise the problem. They recognise that, you know, there's a player here causing hassle. Well, look, might as well step up in it. Change what we're doing here, because it's not fully working here at the moment. They changed it, and they really pushed up, and, you know, they reaped the benefits. They really started moving in the second half. So, yeah, like you said, it seems sometimes it's as simple as that. Just recognise the problem, push up on them, stamp out the problem, and we'll launch from there. And that's what Clare seemed to do. It worked really well. And look, a great win, because we always found it tough going to Parnell Park. I suppose Parnell Park with a crowd is a different beast altogether. But anytime you go to Parnell Park and get some sort of a result, it's brilliant, because Dublin always play well in Parnell Park, and they're always fired up for it. So for Clare to go there and get a win, especially after the last few weeks, it's a big one for them, and especially racking up such a big score. So I think Lowen and Clare will be happy enough after this weekend.
Yeah, no, it's a very good one. I'll have to ask you this one, Mick, you might have the inside line. Does Keane Boland have some sort of a goal celebration where he taps his helmet, or am I reading too much into that?
I watched it, Willie, myself, and I thought, like, I just think he was saying stay mentally switched on.
Right.
I was saying, what was he doing there? Like, you know, now he's flashy enough, young lad, and he's a great hurler. But I watched that myself. I don't know what it's about, but I'm just guessing he was saying stay switched on, you know.
Yeah. Do you see that in the soccer as well, where they're pointing to their brain? Yeah. They're pointing to their brain.
I mean, anyway. I'm surprised he didn't get a clatter anyway.
He's actually a very direct player, isn't he, Paul? Like, I mean, he's a direct style. He came on the last day and he really showed that. And he had a lot of persistence to break through for his goal.
Yeah, he's lively, and you saw him, like you said, he caught the ball, turned straight for goal, and he got hooked. He tried to do the kind of the overhead Colin Finlay job or whatever you want to call it, and got hooked, ball came down, slapped it into the goal. And it's funny you're saying that about tapping the helmet. I just thought of Satanto Halpine straight away. Now, obviously, I'm showing my age there, but running out after scoring a goal and telling everyone to calm down. But players seem to be kind of doing it at the moment. He's a good hurler, and he seems to be a great lad as well. So, look, I mean, he seems to be the kind of player that Dublin can either kind of start him or throw him on, but he just bursts the gut when he comes on, and he does his best, and he pops up and scores. So, you know, he, in fairness to him now, great goal, worked hard, and like Mick said, I'm surprised he didn't get a clatter in at the goal there when he was with the Mount of Clare lads that had him surrounded. But no, in fairness, great goal, so he did well.
Yeah, Owen O'Donnell can't complain about his sending off anyway, Mick. He lost his hurl, got completely pissed off, and just decided to go over and clatter into Shane O'Donnell. Like, I mean, the referee must have thought that wasn't a goal-scoring opportunity. Like, how is that not a penalty?
Yeah, I know, it was close, Willie. You could just see the frustration in Owen O'Donnell. Like, I was loving that battle that he was having, and he was hurling great, but he's liable to do that, you know. When he lost the hurl, when the ball went in the air, he lost the hurl, and then it was like the second he was going over the tackle, it was, don't do it, don't do it. And it was a straight yellow. It was like, there's no complaints. There can't be any complaints from Dublin camp. We just need more players like on just hurling from the front and coming out, because at the moment, with Matty Kenny, I'm just not seeing it with Dublin. I'm not seeing the game plan. When I seen the starting lineup, I was a little concerned. again, midfield, you had James Madden and Chris Crummy's just been moved all over the place trying to fix solutions. And I've been worried about Dublin's midfield for a long time. And like, James Madden is an honest, hard-working hurler, but he's not going to pop up and get you 2 or 3 points from play. And when you see the other combinations for their counties in midfield, you could get 6, 7 points from that position. You're just not getting it from Dublin. So I'm just not seeing it. Like, when they sent the ball in directly, the trolley and Ronan Hayes, they were hurting Clare, and that just wasn't happening enough. Like, and it's not the full forwards line, because the ball just wasn't going in. Dublin's half forward line come out so deep to get the ball. They're just not using it correctly. They're shooting from deep. They're not giving it in. If they're coming out so deep to get the ball, there should be loads of space in front of your full forward line to bring the ball in. And Ronan Hayes can win it high or low. And you can see it when he gets the ball, but he's just not getting enough. So, like, for Dublin and Matty Kenny, I'm just very concerned that they haven't finalised the starting team yet. For Wexford next week, I want to see their championship team. The team's going to go forward with, and they need a result, because you could pick the wins they're going to get this year against Laois and Antrim, and they've lost to everyone else that you think they were going to lose to. So, loads of work for Dublin at the moment.
You mentioned Chris Crummy there. So I was reading the report. I didn't see this one. So he played at midfield and he dropped the centre back and let Conor Burke do the sweeping.
Yeah,
is that what happened?
Conor Burke's good in that role. But like, again, if you're Chris Crummy, you want to be put somewhere and know where you're playing. At the moment, he's just put, like, you're going to your half forward today or midfield today, and then you're back in the half back line. And you can see it in his hurling, because he's taking pot shots where he shouldn't, and then other times he should shoot, he's passing it. And just for his own mindset, he's too important for Dublin to not have him being consistently good. And I can't blame him, because he's been put everywhere in the pitch. So it's just a huge problem for Dublin at the moment, because at this stage of the year, you should have... Like, I know teams are trying players, but Dublin are trying players because they haven't found their team yet. They're not just giving lads a chance. They just don't know who's going to be playing at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. Kilkenny are tipping along nicely, Paul. Brian Cody was interviewed after the match in his mask. He loves that Kilkenny mask. I presume he's vaccinated. Maybe he's just sentimental about it.
I think it's like the hat now. It's the mask that comes of Brian Cody, so I'm not sure. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe just for interviews he'll wear it, because he might be smirking while he's telling you lies, and it's just to just to cover his face. But he's talking about Richie Lahey, Walter Walsh, Niall Brasil, Kieran Wallace. They've made some progress. They were out on the pitch hurling the other night, so we might potentially get some game time into them over the next weekend. The reason we hope it'll be difficult to pick the team this year is the quality of competition for places. And they've loads of players to come back. They seem to be just cruising through this league, Paul, beating anybody in front of them. Now they might have a bench because they're trying out so many players. And maybe that would be a criticism of Kilkenny, that they don't have enough kind of, you know, players that can influence the game off the bench.
Yeah. I think they've learned a lot from this league, definitely. And I think really the weekend, you know, against Laois, again, it goes back to even kind of what we're saying about Limerick. Kilkenny showed like they knew what they were about at the weekend. Every time they got a ball, they were very confident on it, and they knew where they wanted to go with the ball. They knew what way they wanted to work it out. And at the same time, they were flinging in long balls. Like, kind of, that would have been something that we would have always talked about, that there's, when in doubt, there's no such thing as a bad ball to the edge of the box, and get it in there and, you know, keep asking questions of the opposition. So they were moving really well. And, you know, the likes of Owen Cody there had a great game. You look, the last day, Alan Murphy had a brilliant game. James Bergen had a great game again this weekend. He was taken off the week before. Corcoran at wing back again. So, you know, lots of lads in lots of positions hurling really well. And like you said, we haven't even talked about Walter Welch at this stage. Conor Delaney still coming back from an injury. Richie Hogan. You know, there's loads of players. TJ wasn't playing. And I think significantly enough, you know, TJ wasn't playing, but Owen Cody stepped in and filled that mantle there, and you had Billy Ryan moving well around him. So, and even Adrian Mullen is starting to look like he's getting a bit more strength into the legs, and he's getting that confidence back as well. So I think, you know, Kilkenny will be happy enough. It's a good Laois side, and a Laois side that can ask questions of you. So learned a lot definitely during the league. And I think, you know, Brian is right. You know, they'll be looking, it's going to be a tough team to pick over the next while. There will be players disappointed, but that's what you want to have. Similar to what Mick was saying there, I mean, Dublin probably don't know who they want to play yet at the moment, whereas Kilkenny are probably in a different position, and they might have a small bit of trouble of deciding, you know, who is actually going to play. So that's what every team wants to be in the position at the moment. And I think Brian isn't lying when he's saying that they hopefully they will have problems in picking the team in a few weeks.
Yeah, no TJ Reid, like you were saying, he was rested against Leash and Antrim. So that's smart management, I suppose, by Brian Cody, Mick. Like, he's so important to them. I know when Cody came on the freeze, you know, and did well. But, like, I mean, resting TJ for the couple of weeks that, you know, where to be expected to win, it's just smart way of making sure that your main man is all right.
Oh, yeah. Like, a tired TJ is hard to mark, but he never mind a fresh one. So, like, he's going to like the fight when he comes back. It's smart man management. I've been very impressed. Like, no one's really talked about Kilkenny. Like, they're cruising along and that. They've beaten everyone quite handily. And they have players to come back into that squad. So, like, Kilkenny are in a really, really good place for championship for me. I'm feeling for Cheddar. Like, Leash are working extremely hard. They're, like, in fairness to them, they didn't stop battling, which I expect from any team with Cheddar involved. PJ Scully should have had a goal to put them 4 points in it. It was a great.
That was a very bad miss, really. Like, this level, you have to score that. I know Owen Murphy made a brilliant save.
Yeah, that was a smashing save. Like, Owen Murphy's a great goalkeeper, but, like, the commentator said he bounced it and he didn't bounce it and he hit it low. He should have bounced it. Like, if he bounced it from that distance, it'd be virtually impossible to stop. So, look, it's something obviously PJ Scully will work on himself, because if you're one on one from that distance, it has to be in the back of the net. And that would have put four in it, but he would have changed the game completely, you know.
Yeah, it's like, there are some positives for Leash. The Picky Maher played wing back. He's back. That was an interesting one. I didn't see this game, but it'd be interesting to see him playing wing back. Willie Dunphy came on. Enna Lyons came on. They've been out for a good while. Ryan Mullaney, he came on too. John Lennon, Chad Dwyer, Podge Delaney, they're all apparently going to be back for the championship. It's just, look, I do feel for Cheddar a little bit, Paul, because obviously a new manager coming in, it's a whole different panel of players to the one he was used to before. He's got very little time with them. Cheddar would be quite tactical, and, you know, when maybe, you know, it's very difficult to get that all ironed out when you've got very little time, and then you don't have your first team, and they're just taking beating after beating. Now they're in a relegation match, which is a bit of a disaster for Leash club hurling, because that's on feckin' in August before an All-Ireland semi-final. So, like, I mean, we still have the county final from last year to play, and that's just messing that up as well. So I don't know, there doesn't seem to, well, I've listed out some positives, I suppose, but, like, I mean, Leash are out against Wexford in the championship, and they wouldn't be favourites to win that. Like, you know, it could turn out to be a very poor year for Leash.
Yeah, it could turn out to be a year where they kind of just drift through it and not really achieve anything. And especially after the last few years, you know, Leash have really made some real steps on and really encouraging. And the core of that team is still there. You know, Paddy Purcell and these lads, they're still there. So, like, they're a very solid team, and they're not a team that anyone takes for granted. And that goes without saying. They are a good team, and they've great players. They've players there that there's only a small bit of a border between ourselves and them. And there's lads just at the other side of that border, Chad Dwyer and these lads, you know, and we'd certainly love to have him over this side of the border, and that, you know, that's a fair compliment to them lads. But yeah, look, again, Cheddar, I suppose, will be looking at it going, again, there's a little bit of unsurety there. They're maybe not playing with the edge that they were playing with over the last few years, and just trying to get that back into lads as well. But look, again, it's a tough place for Leash to be in, a place they didn't want to be. Probably didn't see themselves going to be in relegation at the start of the year. But look, it's still not all lost for them at this stage. You know, they could muster things back up now. The few lads coming back in might bolster things as well. And then, you know, it's not going to be an easy task. They won't be favourites against Wexford, but they weren't favourites against Dublin a few years ago when they bet them. So Leash could surmount something yet. And look at Cheddar, any man can do it, Cheddar might be able to do it. So hopefully now they'll be able to get things back on track for themselves. But at the moment, they just seem to be drifting through at the moment.
The difference between Leash and Antrim, Michael, or the difference between Leash and Westmeath, Westmeath have a points difference of minus 83. They're going to play each other in the relegation match, like I said, in August. But Westmeath, you know, Shane O'Brien says, we're delighted to be playing in these games. This is all preparation for the Joe McDonagh. It's a fantastic challenge to get, and we're going to take the same approach against Limerick that we have so far. So, like, I mean, they're going to know there's a huge difference when they go to Joe McDonagh level. Like, it's going to be like a holiday when they go back down there, and they could end up using this bad experience, you know, to go back down to a lower level where Leash kind of have to stay at that high level and, you know, are more taken, you know, knock after knock.
Yeah, it's very hard as well to analyse Westmeath, Willie, because of the severe beatings that they're getting. Like, you don't know just how good they are, because they're playing the best teams in the country at the moment. So you just don't know where they're at in their setup. And you won't find out until they play in the John McDonagh and play the likes of Leash and Dublin and also. Like, at the moment, it's just so hard to tell where they're at. But look, they're playing such a high standard. You're right, when they go down like they should be hopping off the ground and looking for victories. It's a tough season for them, and it's demoralising taking these wins. Like, no matter what way Shane O'Brien spins it, you don't want to be taking beatings like that week in and week out, and it does hurt you. But as you said, like, they should be dying for this summer to come and the standard to drop a little bit, and then we'll see what they're about, because at the moment, just don't know. It's so hard to analyse them because they're slow to the ball and they're not getting scoring opportunities, and we're not seeing much of them at the moment, so it's difficult.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. Right, lads, we'll leave it there and we'll come back with performance of the weekend and talk about the games a bit more. Okay, performance of the weekend. And the Galway kind of performance of the weekend, we're looking at Brian Concannon, Conor Whelan and Joe Canning. They almost get a nomination together because they all played so well. Now, you could say Joe Canning got an awful roasting off Callum Lyons for the first 20, 25 minutes until they brought Evan Nyland on, Paul. Was that when Joe got released away from Callum Lyons?
Yeah, he certainly came into the game that small bit more then. It's a fair testament to Callum Lyons. I think he got 5 points from wing back. And while marking Joe Canning and keeping Joe Canning quiet. But again, as much as that's a compliment to Callum Lyons, Joe Canning was nearly man of the match after that then. Like, I mean, he was flying through and doing things that, you know, his vision, even the flick through for the goal, the one-handed flick through, getting his own goal as well. So he ticked all the boxes really after that. Like, he was supporting players, he was getting on ball, he was, you know, knocking balls through for players, but still getting his own scores, cutting sideline, his mandatory sideline over the bar then as well. So, yeah, great game afterwards, but it's funny that we're saying that Caleb Lyons had a great game and Joe Canning had a great game, but in fairness, again, they identified the problem again that if they left Joe Canning there and Caleb Lyons for too long, Joe mightn't have had the influence. So, yeah, look, great games, and there seem to be good performances all over the pitch there, really, between Galway and Waterford, more so obviously on the Galway side.
Yeah, the attacking talent Galway have, Concannon, Conor Whelan, Canning, you haven't even mentioned Cottle Mannion and Conor Cooney, who seems to be coming into a bit of form at full forward. Brian Concannon is the one that's impressed me the most though, Mick, because we kind of know the other lads have performed, you know, and been really good. Concannon kind of making the breakthrough last year, but Jesus, he's dynamite really, isn't he? And he's able to kind of win his own ball, take his man on, set up scores, score goals himself.
Yeah, I agree with you really completely. He was my man of the match. He's a cornerback's nightmare. Like, he never stops moving. And when he gets the ball, it's goal. That's all he thinks about. It's his first thought. And no matter where he is on the pitch, if there's someone in front of that goal, he's going to give it to them. So the defenders can never think the ball is dead. And that's what caught Waterford out twice. Like, because normally a forward in that position just sticks it over the bar. Whereas his first thought always is goal, and it's great. He's been improving slowly over the last few years, but this year he's been phenomenal. And like, if you're playing in that forward line and he gets the ball, that's where you're seeing so much movement, because he'll give it to you. If you're 10 yards in front of that goal, he'll give the ball across the box. And that's why Galway got the two goals, and there were two goals when they needed him most. So for me, he's been hugely influential in everything Galway do this year.
Yeah, have you marked him, Paul?
I don't remember. I don't really remember marking him, but like Mick said there, you know, I've watched him there. He's a brilliant player. He's kind of this corner forward that I think managers dream of having, in that he can just, he'll be in the corner there and fling him in any kind of a ball, and he'll make a real honest attempt to win it. And once he does win it, you know, he'll give the cornerback hardship. He'll go for goal. He'll ask questions of you. He had a great year last year as well. So I don't remember marking him myself, but, you know, just been watching him there over the last 2 years. And, you know, he has a real kind of real edge about him when he plays, goes for goal, doesn't mind what way he gets the ball. And, you know, I think, you know, Galway will be looking at that going, geez, that's nearly one position sorted for us, that we have a kind of a scavenger in there that will win any ball that we want to give to him, and is capable of popping up with two or three goals if he gets a good run at it in a game. So, yeah, he's going really well, and I think Galway will be delighted with him in the form he's in.
Yeah, exactly. After that Shane Bennett catch, it was actually interesting when I was watching it. Galway kind of, or Waterford might have thought this was going to be a tactic, and the next two went down to the half back line. Padraig Mannion won one, and Gerard McInerney won the other. And that was kind of like, there you go. That was just a kind of a one off. James McNaughton and Keelan Malloy. Jesus, like, I mean, you're talking there about Dublin's midfield not getting any scoring return. So Keelan scored 5 points, McNaughton scored 6, but 3 from play. That's 8 points from play from your midfield. And I don't know, maybe if hurling's going to move another kind of way forward, Mick, is it? Could you play two forwards in midfield and, like, really torture the other team? Or I don't know, like, but these two, getting 8 points from play from your midfield is some return.
Yeah, and Woolley, what was more impressive was they were the midfield partnership for Wexford that day was Theo Keith and Emo McGovern. Two of the most influential players and two fitness machines. And they were beaten, they were well beaten by the Antrim partnership. Like McNaughton and Keenan Malloy, they were comfortable on the ball, they were working, and their distribution was excellent, and their finishing then. So that's a package, and it adds so much to your attacking formation when you have midfielders like that who are willing to get up the pitch and support, and they're obviously giving it to them all the time because they were the out ball all the time. It's the reason they got 8 points from play. So like even Keenan Malloy's last point, it was difficult. It was on the sideline. He knew it was going to be the last puck of the game, and he had the composure to stick it over. So that's a huge asset for Gleeson and for Antrim.
No, it definitely is. And Keenan Malloy, I specifically remember having him down in performance of the weekend after the Clare win as well, Paul.
Yeah. I mean, he's in great form at the moment. And like you said, you know, I think Antrim know what they're about at the moment and know what way they want to use their players. Like eight points from play is no accident from midfield. I think the benefit of the lads is they support the forward line in a great way, in that they make these great runs to give the option to the forwards that if you're after running into trouble, well, we're there for the pop pass. And, you know, the score at the end there where he just ran up the right side. But what was brilliant was the ball broke down kind of towards a left half forward position, nearly midfield. But Antrim knew that there was going to be a runner going up that right side. And it was instinctive. You could see the player turning that I'm going to spray this ball across into that open space. And now, again, it was by no means a foregone conclusion he was going to put it over the bar. But it showed the awareness of what Antrim are doing, and that it's no accident. They know where the runners are. They know how to use the ball, and they know how to win it in trouble, first of all, but then get it out of the trouble, out to a player who's now running off the shoulder, and the midfielders are doing that for them. So, it goes back to this thing, they know what they're about, they know what way they want to play it, and it's no accident what they're doing at the moment. You know, Gleeson has them set up really well, and I think we're all enjoying it. We're loving watching Antrim, and if I was anyone going broadcasting the game over the next while, you'd nearly follow Antrim, regardless of whatever team is going. Antrim are playing a great brand of hurling, great attitude, and look, they're set up really well for the championship.
Yeah, no, they definitely are. Jack O'Connor, probably the one bright spark for Cork. He scored 2-1. His two goals were absolutely brilliant. I was really impressed with the first one. He kind of paused at the top of the backswing to make sure he was going to get a good connection on it.
Yeah, he's a serious hurler, really. And the same sort of thing as Concannon. When he got it, his first thought was goal. And like, it's no easy task to round Limerick's full back line, like, you know, and he did it with ease. And he should have had a third one. The one he missed, he stuck over the bar, was probably his easiest chance. So he's a huge goal threat for Cork. And like, he was always an out ball. And they obviously have that game plan where they switch the play and he's that out man running in the corner. And then when he gets it, he turns the corner back and goes straight for goal. So and he has the composure to finish. He said it was a great finish for his first goal. So huge asset for Cork, and he's going to cause some trouble in 4 weeks' time, because the same men are going to be on him, you know. So and he beat them.
Yeah, he definitely. His second goal was brilliant too, Paul. It was one of those smash ones. We're seeing loads of these smash goals now, aren't we? Obviously, you can't get hooked, but he was coming in at such a tight angle. He almost spun it. He made the bounce spin back into the goals. Did he, or am I overthinking it?
No, I looked at it as well. I thought it was going at a funny angle when you saw there was a reverse angle, I think it was, and it looked like it probably was going to glance wide and he spun it in. Whether he meant it or not, I don't know. But again, it was his only option, really. He couldn't swing back, and forwards know this at the moment that, you know, Cian Boland did it as well, or he attempted to do it as well. So forwards kind of know there's a lad behind me here. They're going to get the hook. This is a good option. And as well, it makes it hard for the keeper. Like, you're throwing the ball up in the air, but you're batting it towards the ground. And it's like Mick was saying with, you know, the shot against Owen Murphy, that if he shot it into the ground, the keeper doesn't know what's going to happen. The ball could bounce up anyway. And that was the exact example of it. The ball hit the ground. In the reverse angle, looked like it could have been going wide, but just spun into the goal, you know. So it's a great way, and also it helps. Like, he was coming down, he was pretty much on the end line. I mean, where do you swing the hurl at that stage? So he was looking sharp. Again, used it really well, and we are seeing a lot more of these goals, but I think forwards are just getting cleverer again on the old cornerbacks.
Yeah, but then again, it's feeding in, Mick. The skill levels of this game are gone absolutely through the roof, and they've never been as good. And players are doing things on a regular basis that might have been, you know, like people would have been in awe of them maybe 10 years ago, but we're seeing it just in one weekend. Like, I mean, Joe Canning doing the sideline, we're not even talking about that sideline very much today, because he just does it so often. All these goals are of the highest level.
Yeah, the extraordinary becomes normal, William. he said it on the Sunday game last night, he just expects these sidelines to go over. Like, I remember Troy for Offaly in the 90s flicked the ball back into his hand, and there was loads of talk about it, you know, just that little flick in the middle of all the trouble. And we're seeing that every week now. Like, we're seeing Keane kick, like the likes of Keane from Keane Lynch doing it all the time. Tony Kelly, there's little flicks, there's backhand passes, there's lads flicking balls overheads. And again, you just have to appreciate it because it's so difficult. And to do it in the heat of the battle and when you're surrounded by top players is even more impressive. So you just have to appreciate it because it does become the norm, but the skill level is becoming outrageous. You very rarely see a bad touch anymore. The lads don't be sprinting out to the wing and they're going to miscontrol it straight into the hand. And again, it makes things so much easier for you if that first touch is up there in the high standards, you know.
Yeah, Tony Kelly got 20 points. Now, there's not much more to add about Tony Kelly. I've run out of things to say about him, Paul. One thing I would think is a bit of a strange one from a Dublin point of view is to give him the freedom of the park when they actually were playing a sweeper. Because if you have a sweeper, that gives your centre-back, you know, the licence to go follow him somewhere. So, like, I mean, it was a strange one from Dublin.
Yeah, I think this is the kind of anomaly that is Tony Kelly. We would have tried to mark him over the few years. And the thing with Tony Kelly is that we're talking about players and other teams drifting around and supporting off the shoulder. I think Tony Kelly is just told, go where you want. You're Tony Kelly. Go where you want. Follow the ball wherever you want. Because we saw against Wexford last year, you know, he was scoring points on the 14-yard line at the sideline. And then, you know, we're seeing him in matches popping up nearly in centre-back. He scored a free from nearly, I think it was inside his own 45 against Dublin, and he's just running around. So you could send a player with him, and it would make sense definitely to send a player, but you still have to sacrifice a really good player to follow him, because when you get to that position, he's a strong player. It's not just that he's skillful, he's very strong and he has incredible amount of running in him. So you need someone that can last 70 minutes of running with Tony Kelly, but you're also sacrificing a player now and probably a very good player that you could have in the back line. So it's a very tough situation for any team. And I think the one thing with Tony Kelly is that he's not the same as any other player. It's not just following any normal inter-county player, if there is such a thing, but any normal inter-county forward. He's a different kettle of fish altogether. When he gets to a ball, you know, he could pick up that ball and run 45 yards in a zigzag, and the player that's following him just looks foolish, you know. So he kind of is the exception to the man marking thing, because wherever he goes, it's not just as easy as following him around the pitch. He really is that good.
Yeah, you nearly want to have one lad following him in the first half and substitute him off at half time and send a fresh lad on to follow him everywhere, because I say Tony Kelly runs up some serious GPS times. Desi Hutchinson, Mika, we've touched on his goal a little bit, but geez, it was so spectacular, the catch. The catch, the courage, because there was two Galway players coming either side. They ended up smashing into each other and falling on the ground. And he turns and sticks it into the top corner off the post. Like, I mean, you'd be going a long way to see a better goal than that.
Oh, it was a brilliant goal. Like that catch, like, he could have got an awful of doing there, because they're two big Galway men in between. He was in between, and it's the catch, it's the bravery, and his composure on the ball. Like, he has some pace. And he turns on a dime. He goes, like, he can stop and turn, and it's an absolute nightmare as a defender, because, as they said last night, you could get turned quite easily if you're too close to him, and you can't let him go because the pace of him. But the finish after it, because he caught it, he had the composure to look up, he looked at options, and then the finish was unreal. Like, he's a brilliant hurler. I love watching him. He has all the attributes. He could play anywhere in the pitch. You could have him out half forward or half back. He has all the attributes of a great hurler, but I love watching him. He's so exciting to watch. And I suppose if Milan scored that, people would be raving about it for weeks. And you don't see a better goal than that, like, throughout the years. It was exceptional.
Yeah, Caelum Lyons, obviously 5 points from wing back. I don't know, Paul, how do you think Waterford will be feeling? They obviously coughed up 2-4 just before half time, which was the difference between the teams. But, like, they were well able to compete. I thought they played some very nice hurling.
Yeah, they did. It's a small bit of a confusing one, because if you told Waterford what they were going to score before the match, they would have told you, oh, we're going to win this one fairly well. But they did cough up a lot. I think it was just a reflection of the game. You know, sure, Galway coughed up a lot also in that way. But look, Waterford, I think there was a lot more positives for Waterford to take than there was negatives. But they will still be looking that, you know, they conceded quite a lot, and the goals that went in as well. You don't want to leak them in Championship, because regardless what you're putting over at the other end, it doesn't matter when you're conceding that much as well. But I think it was a kind of a once-off, really. It just seemed to be one of those matches that both teams just went at it. There was no real regard for, trying to park the bus or anything like that. It was just, we're going to out try and out shoot each other here. So Watford definitely won't be happy with conceding that just before half time. But they have huge positives to look at. And I think they're just going to look at it maybe and go, okay, lads, we need to be a small bit more organised here at the back. If we're going to be putting up this score, well, we don't need to be shooting ourselves in the foot by conceding these silly scores at the other end. Not even silly scores. They were great scores. But you still want to be stamping it out whatever way you can to give yourself any sort of a chance in the next game.
Yeah, they had a pretty strong team out as well, Mick, didn't they? Now, I think Galway pretty had a pretty strong team out as well. So, like, did it feel like a hammering for Waterford, or what's your take on it?
No, I don't think so, Willie. I think they hurled really well for spells of the games. And like a few, as Paul said, a few goals were against the run of play a little bit for Galway. Like, I thought Waterford were great, and I don't think Liam Cahill would be that disappointed after the game, because they hurled really well throughout the pitch. It was a very high-scoring game, which I think he'd be a little bit more defensively minded come Championship. And he has, his good players are hurling well. Austin Gleeson, for me, is the one sort of unknown at the moment. He didn't get on much ball, didn't hurl well, and he gave the ball away then for Concannon's goal near the end, which killed the game. That's the only question mark I'd have and worry I'd have in regard to Waterford. But I think he'd walk away from that game quite happy, because like, it was very, very high-scoring and he hurled really well in parts. They would have... Scoreline flattered Galway a little bit.
Gleeson won't be there, Paul, for come the Championship. Look, he just won't. He's coming off such a good year in the forwards. He's needed up there. Irla Daly or Kevin Moran could do just as good a job there. And the problem with having these centre-backs like Coleman and Gleeson, and they're very obvious tactics. Oh, we want you to play make from there. What does the opposition do? Because they know you put Conor Whelan on Gleeson, you put Keane Lynch on Coleman, and now let's see what you're going to do.
Yeah, I don't think he will be there. Like you said, Irla Daly, he had a great All-Ireland final when Tadhg Burke unfortunately went off. So I think there's kind of nearly, again, far be it for me to say Liam Cahill knows his team, but you know, I think he's a good option to have for centre-back, because he kind of plays the Tadhg Burke role really well if there is an option there for someone to replace Tadhg Burke. And again, yeah, I'd be pushing Austin Gleeson up that small bit further. Again, I think Derek McGrath said it last night in the Sunday game, like Watford want Austin Gleeson everywhere, to be honest. They don't even know where they want him specifically. So, but I would be pushing him up, you know, get him up around centre forward and let him drift, nearly let him do that kind of Tony Kelly thing if he wants to do it. I think Austin is obviously finding maybe a bit of form, a bit of confidence still at the moment. But I think moving around positions or keeping him too far back, away from the goal, he's a goal threat, and we've seen it over the years. When he's on form, he can just run through defences, and I believe, regardless if that's a Limerick defence, Tipperary defence, Dublin defence, I don't think it matters. I think once he clicks, I'd have him towards centre forward, midfield centre forward direction, where he can run at goal and at the very least cause problems or draw players to him, where now Desi Hutchinson or the Bennetts are running off the shoulder. So I don't think we'll see him there. I think Irla Daly might step in for Championship, and they'll push Austin Gleeson up that bit further and really ask a few more questions of teams.
Yeah, I think you're right. Dermot Burns, Mick, was absolutely brilliant the other night. Like, I mean, it was a great answer for getting sent off against Galway, a game suspension, straight back into the team, scoring points from frees, from play, throwing his body on the line, you know, catches, catching puck outs, like an all-round dominant display from him.
He's brilliant, Willie. Like, he has everything in his locker room. That passage of play where he got the point, the catch, the block. It's an incredible pass to play, and sometimes you forget about Dermot Burns with all the Limerick players around the place and the things. But he is so consistent. Like, you very rarely see a forward take him to the cleaners or do anything on him, and he's so influential for everything that Limerick do. His balls on the forward line are brilliant. He scores, he takes frees, and he's brilliant in the air. So he hasn't got any really chinks in his armour.
No,
so he's brilliant to have there.
Yeah, and even Richie English clearance off the line, Paul. Like, I mean, they really just throw their bodies on, you know, they throw their bodies on the line, Limerick, to try just in a league game that they're winning well.
Yeah. Like, that was a great save. And it's funny, like, we're not even really talking about it, but that was Championship, and that was really important. If there was only a point or two in it, you know, we'd be talking about that for days. It was a great save. And again, it just showed the hunger of Richie English to get back there. And if that ball went into the net, it wasn't really going to change the whole complexion of the match. But he got back there and, you know, slapped it away, hit the crossbar, I think it was, and actually came back out. But just shows the attitude that they're fighting for every ball. And I think even Dermot Burns, there was a ball went in towards the full back line. He got a great block and he came up with it. And the Cork lads fouled him, and they all kind of jumped up and were celebrating that they, you know, that they'd broken down the play, won the free, and now they were going back on the attack. So I think those two players show really the attitude of Limerick at the moment and the headspace that they're in. And sure, look, the likes of Dermot Burns and Richie English, two better men to be doing it.
Yeah, I know their attitude's great. I was looking at it this morning, Mick, and I saw Colin Coughlin. Obviously, he had played so well. And I was thinking, geez, yeah, well, you know, when Declan Hannan retires, you know, Kyle Hayes will go centre-back, and now they're no weaker than they were. And then I just googled Declan Hannan. He's only 28. He's not retiring anytime soon. The options to have, like, I mean, you know, Casey back at full-back, Dan Morrissey wasn't there, Barry Nash. Like, I mean, two big names is going to lose out in that back line.
Yeah, oh, the options there, like, you'd love to be John Kiley, like, they're all stars, Willie. Like it wouldn't surprise you to see Coughlin win an all star this year and start there. And like, where do you put Kyle Hayes? You could put him back in the forwards. You can move him around. Like, they're all hurlers that can play really anywhere in the pitch because of the way Limerick play. They get up and down. They're all capable of scoring. So you can move them around anywhere, and it's a great headache for a manager to have. So like, I don't think he's complaining, but like the depth in that Limerick panel is incredible. And like, I love Declan Hannan. I love his hurling. He's such fast hands, and when he gets the ball, he's so sharp-minded. Like, he can make a decision in the last second, and it's nearly always the right decision. He had a great game for just being back. So again, the options there, and it's frightening, that Limerick backline.
Yeah. Do you think, Paul, there could be an option to throw a rabbit out of the hat later in the championship and stick Declan Hannan up to the edge of the square alongside Gallan? Maybe, I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. You know, considering the amount of options they have in the backs.
Well, sure, they might as well. They probably still win the All-Ireland at this rate, so they can do it. But it's funny you're saying Declan Hannan's 28. I'm only thinking of it myself. I was in San Francisco in 2011 on an All-Star trip, and Declan Hannan was on it. I'm just trying to think, he must have been in junior cert or something that year if he was on the trip. But it's incredible to think he's 28, and he's one of the older fellas on the team. And I think he's kind of, for me, I think he's the glue that holds it all together, really. I mean, we're talking about Dermot Burns and Kyle Hayes and all these lads making the runs. For me, I think Declan Hannan is actually the fella. It's the reason he's the captain, or maybe it's the reason he's the captain. I think he holds the whole team together there for Limerick, and he talks to lads. Like, they're in a position now where if he wasn't there, I think the show would still go on. You know, not saying that he's going to lose his position by any means, but I think he's actually, through his captaincy and how he's conducted himself and the way he plays the game, I think one of the biggest things that Declan Hannan is in that Limerick team for as well is how he organises everybody around him, and everybody knows their job. And I think that's the biggest influence he has on that team. So, you know, the longer he can stay there, you know, it'll be a long time before he goes from there. He could be hurling there for another 5-6 years, and they could be rotating lads through him, but there's no shortages of options. So I think Declan Hannan will hold down the centre back, and might be Kyle Hayes to one side, might be Dermot Burns, could be Coughlin, you wouldn't know. But I think Declan Hannan really is the glue that holds it all together in the back line.
I think, is Dan Morrissey's time in the half-back line gone, Mick?
Yeah, I think so, because when you name them players, Willie, and he's been so good in the full-back line, I think that's it now. He did a too good a job back there, like, so you don't need him in the half-back line. They're too good, so I can see him as a full-back for the championship. But on Hannan, like, he's an old head, Willie. Like, for me, his biggest asset is he's so calm. You never see him fist-pumping or roaring and shouting or hitting a dirty belt. He's really calm heading him in that back line throughout all the chaos, and I think players feed off it, you know, like, that he's so calm on the ball no matter what's going on around him. So that's why he's so influential.
Right, so, like, I mean, Dan Morrissey then is just a straight battle with Mike Casey, Paul, for the full-back position. Would you have that as well?
Yeah, they have serious options for that full back line there. I think Sean Finn is the only lad that's really nailed down, and that's no offence to any of the rest of them, but you know, you have Richie English there, you have Casey, you know, you have Morrissey, and they're all, it's not because any of them are hurling bad, they're all hurling really, really well. So it's a straight shootout really between the whole lot of them. But I think Sean Finn is the only lad that could be absolutely nailed down, but, like, you mean Richie English then in the other corner, sure, an exceptional corner back, but then you're looking at potentially Mike Casey or Morrissey on the sideline, you know. So brilliant position for them to be in. And again, we've said it a few times, wouldn't like to be picking that full back line, but I think the only man guaranteed is possibly Sean Finn.
Yeah, because English is up against Nash for the number four jersey, probably. We'll have to leave it there, lads. Performance of the weekend goes to Keane Lynch for me. I think he set the tone. He, you know, the turnovers, the points, the assists, just keeps everything ticking over, Mick, doesn't he? Like, I mean, he's an outstanding, outstanding player, and he's found a position centre forward, probably. And because the centre backs love dropping off, he just pretty much running around doing what he likes.
Yeah, and between the lines, he's so good, Willie. Like, he's so difficult to mark. He just pops up in positions. If there's a ruck, he's outside of waiting for the ball. hands are so quick, he can pick it up in trouble. And again, he's sort of given the freedom of the pitch. What he pops up everywhere. And like Tony Kelly, he's so good. John Kiely sort of said, go do your thing. Like, you know, do whatever you want. And he's so influential on the game. He's phenomenal. I would have picked him myself, even with Tony Kelly's 20 points.
Just here's one thing here, Paul, quickly before we go, that's popped into my mind. And I think I've said this last year. Why would a team, right, say you've got Keane Lynch at centre forward or Conor Whelan, why would you not say to the centre back, look, I want you to mark him. I want you to mark him. I want you to stay with him. I don't want any of this dropping nonsense. He's too important. And tell one of your wing backs to drop off the less dangerous wing forward and come back in and cover. Do you know what I mean? Why are they letting these brilliant centre forwards have a free role?
Yeah, it's not as easy with the likes of Keane Lynch in these, because you could man mark him. But let's say, like, Keane Lynch essentially took Coleman out of the game the other day, so now you're taking Coleman out of it. It's possibly the option of playing someone centre back that you don't really care about them hurling centre back. They're just going in to do a man marking job. But the other side is then, because their forward lines are so strong, like you're talking about Conor Whelan there as well with Galway, there's too many lads around them that are still going to influence the game. And I think what automatically happens then is, because those players around are influencing the game, it automatically opens up. The back line still just opens up and you'll see those players coming into the game. So if you go out and mark Keane Lynch for the first 15, 20 minutes and your man is touch tight for the whole thing, eventually I think you'll still see problems popping up around him. And naturally the other defender will go and try and, you know, stamp out these problems and help his back line. Now Keane Lynch isn't being marked as much, and Keane Lynch only needs the yard, or Conor Whelan only needs a yard, and they start sticking the ball back over the bar. And the other thing to say is, and we said it at the start, these lads are still immensely strong players, so you can man mark them. Still doesn't mean that you're going to stop them from getting the ball. They'll still just bully you. So it's a tough one. Do you sacrifice one of your main players to go, and one of your best hurlers to go and really put these lads out of the game? Possibly a good option, and something teams will have to look at going forward.
Yeah, no, we'll definitely discuss that on the show, because it's a difficult one with all these good centre forwards. Right, we'll leave it there. Keane Lynch, performance of the weekend. We'll be back on Thursday and we'll preview the weekend's action. So we'll talk to you all then. Good luck.
No such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do?
No, we don't.
A donkey is eating, a donkey is a palace. There's nothing else to eat.
He was massive. Legs, ass, spilt. But I burst out laughing watching him.